evening and welcome to the heart of London's theatre land, Drury Lane. Here at the luxurious Moriducky Theatre, or, as the actors say,
Theatre Moriducky.
The audience are eagerly waiting to see a special final recording of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, Again, given in the presence of His Royal Highness, the Duke of Cornwall. This performance is proudly supporting the Duke of Cornwall's small holdings, with all proceeds going to the Prince's Trust. Of course, these 53,000 hectares of land are titled the Duchy of Cornwall and are passed down to each generation in the west of England. This gave rise to the popular phrase, pass the duchy on the left-hand side. And here we see the musicians coming back from the pub, and soon they'll be ready to go. Told you so. And a breathless hush descends as the spotlight falls on the conductor. The musicians prepare to play, the audience cover their ears, and we hear this horrific sound! And the unmistakable strains of the Angus Broom tune ushers to the mics the various but limited talents of Hannah Boydell! Hey! David Clark! Hey! Barnaby Eaton-Jones! Hey! K.V. Brown! And me, Ben Perkins. Yay! With the Farrington Four showing everyone their instruments.
Order, order. As Director General, I call to order this meeting to discuss our latest BBC venture, Radio Prune.
Hear, hear.
Well, well.
Due to the fact that these new chaps are thinking they're as talented as the original Wonder Team, ha! It means we just can't afford to do any more shows on a BBC budget. So I'm afraid that Radio Prune is going to go commercial.
Gasp!
Commercial radio, never! It's against everything the BBC stands for. It's immoral, undemocratic, undignified. Might even be entertaining.
I'm afraid we must face facts. Commercial radio is our only hope for affording this show, even with a bunch of nobodies in it. I mean, look at television.
Good idea. What's on?
As chairman of this board, I suggest that we follow the example of the commercial TV companies.
Yeah, the sky's the limit.
Exactly. So Radio Prune goes commercial.
Everybody tune to Radio Prune. Just turn that dial for the swinging style and tune, 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 tune to prune. Radio Prune! And so, straight to a commercial.
I'm standing outside this supermarket asking housewives when they come out if they'd like to try the two-for-one swap. So before I get arrested, let's just ask this lady if she wants to swap. Excuse me, madam.
Here, what do you want, young man?
I see you've bought a packet of Raz washing powder.
Oh, yes, yes. I always buy Raz. Hey, I've got a midriff bulge, you know.
Well, now I'm going to offer you, in exchange for your packet of Raz, these two empty packets of leading top-price detergent.
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, you'd rather have your packet of Raz.
I wouldn't swap for anything.
Well, it has about £10.
No, no.
£50?
No, no.
£100?
No, no.
And a Rolls Royce.
Oh, no, never.
The Crown Jewels.
Oh, no.
Oh, you have turned down the Crown Jewels for your packet of Raz.
I have.
She just won't swap. And that's what we usually find. Most Raz users are too thick to know a good thing when they see it.
And now, a song about a policeman falling in love. His made-up girl has been framed, but he still finds her an arresting sight, etc., etc.
Into our lives, and this
this. Oh, oh, oh. My identikit girl. My identikit girl. I wish that she could be my pal. My identikit girl. Oh, oh. Well, if you think you've seen her, call 999. And I will apprehend her and make her mine. But like all the other faces upon my list, I don't suppose that she'll exist. Oh, oh. My identikit girl. My identikit girl. I wish that she could be my pal. My identikit girl. Oh, my identikit girl. My identikit girl. I wish that she could be my pal. My identikit, I invented it. My identikit girl. Oh, oh, yeah.
For your listening pleasure, Radio Prune is proud to present the first in a series of short plays specially written for radio, 30 Second Theater. Tonight's play is entitled Retribution. It opens at the country house of Paul Birch and his wife, Catherine.
I'm leaving you, Paul.
No.
Yes, I've had enough. Paul, what are you doing with that knife?
Take that.
Next morning.
I'm Chief Inspector Baldwin of the Yard, and we found the man who did it.
I'm innocent, I'll tell you.
We just found out he didn't do it.
Oh, thank heavens.
I'll find a handkerchief at the scene of the crime.
A good work, sir.
Initials, PB.
Damn!
PB? That must be Paul Buck.
All right, I admit it.
Funny how they all make one little mistake.
And that concludes this week's 30 Second Theatre. Next week, Lord of the Rings. And now, in the bedroom of a remote Welsh cottage, it's night time, and nothing is stirring. Well, aside from...
Denzel! Denzel! Wake up! There's someone in the room!
What? What is it?
There's someone in the room!
I'm asleep!
You're not!
How do you know? I could be talking in my sleep.
I swear to you, Denzel, there is someone in the room!
Oh.
Well, do something!
All right. I'll go to sleep.
No, Denzel, no! Oh, why are you such a coward? You were even frightened of that moth last night.
I killed it.
Yes, Denzel, but most people would have killed it with a newspaper, not by pushing a wardrobe over on it. Did you hear that? Find out who it is.
Who is it? Who's there?
Who's where?
There, where you are.
Oh, it's only me.
It's only him.
Only who?
Excuse my asking, but who are you only?
Well, I'm the man from the gas board.
Denzel! Denzel, he's lying! He's a burglar!
Right, well, over here, see? Now, we both think you're a burglar.
I'm only an amateur burglar. I don't steal things.
Why not?
Well, then I'd be a professional burglar and have to start paying tax.
Switch on the light.
Right. I'll switch on the light.
Oh, no, don't do that.
Why not?
I haven't got any clothes on.
We ever not?
Well, I took them off so I wouldn't wake you up.
Ask him where he is.
But where to are you?
I'm in bed with you.
In our bed?
I've got golden army clothes on.
Well, now, you get out of my bed, you naughty burglar, or I'll report you to the HMRC.
Oh, I'm going.
You know, Denzel, you really should put a front door on this cottage.
And now, you'll have to excuse us as we pause for another commercial.
Are you 21? Are you over 6 feet? Well-educated, good-looking, physically fit with good vision and healthy lungs? Are you tired of your present unexciting work and think you're suited for a better job? Cocky little devil, aren't you?
It's time for this century's Prune Play of the Week. Tonight's play is by Octavius Nostril, a retired gorilla fluffer from Ohio. It's a radio adaptation of that rollicking, boisterous historical novel, Moll Flounders, Diary of a Woman of Fortune.
year 1703 to poor but married parents. My birthplace was in the little town of Chunky Plantagenet in the county of Gloucestershire. This came as a great surprise to my parents, who was living in Wigan at the time. Of my early life, I remember but little, except that I spent my days wandering around the countryside, watching the summer turn to autumn, the leaves turn into gold, and my father turn into drink. My father was a powerful man, but gentle, and for hour after hour would bounce me on his knee or against the wall as his fancy took him. He used to always do say to me, "If it do rain for 30 days in the merry month of May, then it's practically June." I couldn't argue with that. I saw very little of my mother as a child, as she was a grown-up by the time I met her. And so my childhood passed, until one day, as I strolled through the nearby woods, I suddenly came face to face with a tall, handsome stranger astride a beautiful horse wearing hunting pink. Before I could ask why his horse was wearing hunting pink, he spoke. I'd never heard a horse speak before, and I gasped with amazement. The handsome rider dismounted and tossed back his luxuriant black hair, which landed in the grass behind him. He addressed me.
What have we here? What's your name, my pretty?
Moll Flounders, sir.
Ah, you're a handsome wench and no mistake.
Sir, I believe you're a stranger to these parts.
That's right. I usually play ones with sillier voices.
But I've not seen you before.
I am Sir Roger de Coverlet, the new squire.
Ooh, I know all about you, squire, and your wicked practices.
There's nothing wicked about squire practices. But you are forgiven, my dear. Come, let us sit upon the grass, and we will make up.
Ooh, all right.
May I borrow your lipstick? Thank you. But now I must go, but we shall meet again. For you shall come to work at Coverlet Manor.
Without another word, he jumped on his horse. I watched him jumping up and down in it for a few minutes, then I hurried home, shaken, not stirred. Next morning, who should ride up to our humble cottage but Sir Roger? He spoke earnestly with my father for a few moments, and before I knew what was happening, Sir Roger had pulled me up onto his horse behind him and we was off. We soon clambered back on again and galloped up the road towards the manor.
Pretty. Coverlet Manor. You shall work here as a chambermaid from now on. Ah, here is Grimbling, the butler.
You're welcome home, Master Roger. Your mother wishes to see you in the green room. I'm afraid she's not very well today. She's been seeing spots before her eyes.
Dear me. Has she seen the doctor?
No, sir. Just spots.
That's a very old joke.
I'm a very old butler, sir.
Come along, Moll. Let's go and see Mother.
We entered a large green room, and sitting at the fireplace was, finally, the actual Lady Constance de Coverlet.
Oh, the actual Lady Constance de Coverlet. Oh, who just said that? Hello. It gives me great pleasure, and I hope it always will. What century are we in?
Oh, my dear lady, how lovely to see you again. How long is it now?
Let me see. Oh, thank you very much. Now, why did you send for me, Shorty?
Your son is home.
Oh, you have done well, Grimbling. Take this tennis racket for your services.
Ah, yes, the famous Lady Constance de Coverlet. Blushing, I dropped a curtsy.
Oh, butterfingers.
Mother, this is Moll, my intended.
I don't wish to know what you're intending, you naughty boy. Well, come here, child, where I can see you. Ooh, you have a pretty face, my dear, and a fine figure to boot.
Wow!
Roger, you come here. I do not approve of this young lady. She comes from rude peasant stock. Oh, should make a very good soup. Yes. If I turned my back on her, there's no knowing what she might pinch.
I'm spoiled for choice, frankly.
You can trust her mother and her father.
Now don't go getting involved with her. Now it is time for my tea and muffins. Ask Grimbling to bring the tea and tell Muffins I'm waiting for you.
And so I started work at Covelet Manor. One day, when I was blattening the cheese, I noticed something in the doorway. It was the door! Then it opened.
Oh, Moll, do you like the new dress I bought you?
Oh, yes, but I think it might look better on me.
Moll, will you marry me?
Roger, this is so sudden.
Then the answer's no.
Yes!
Oh.
For the next 4 days, he hardly spoke. Then...
What do you mean, yes?
I mean I will.
Oh, I see. Oh, we must tell Mother at once. Mother, I'm going to marry Moll, your chambermaid.
Oh, handmaid?
No, chambermaid.
And now I would like to be serious for a moment. Thank you. Yes. Send me muffins. I would like him to come and see me down below.
I think he's already seen it enough.
Don't laugh at that.
Filthy minds out there. They don't make children like they used to.
How are they doing it, then?
The next morning, Roger and I was married, and that night a glittering ball was given.
Here's a glittering ball for you, my dear.
Oh, what a surprise!
Well, Sir Roger did ask me to hold a ball in your honour. And now it's time for a lovely party. So much for me to do.
I can see your problem.
Well, I dressed in rather a hurry.
Grimbling, is there anything else?
Nope. Just popped out for that joke, sir.
Well, put it back in and leave at once.
As I entered the ballroom that night, all eyes turned in my direction. Gathering up my skirts, which had fallen off in all the excitement, I walked serenely into the room.
Oh, there you are, Moll. What's been holding you up?
A safety pin.
At the Covelet Ball, the footman announced any of the guests who had funny enough names.
Ladies and gentlemen, pray silence for the late arrivals of the Covelet Manor Ball. General Lee speaking, his son, Frank Lee speaking, and his daughter, Norma Lee speaking. There's some easy ones to start with. The Count of Amir Often and Duke Amir Often. Yes, you've been here before. Walking through the doors in a funny way, it's Mr. and Mrs. Royds and their daughter, Emma Royds. She's accompanied by the titled son of the appliance family, Sir Jekyll Appliance. Avert your eyes, please, for the well-known naturists, Mr. and Mrs. Gleebits, and their son, Dan Gleebits. And suspend your critical faculties for the following, Lord and Lady A.G. String and their son, Aaron A.G. String. Mr. and Mrs. Aceous Border and their son, Herb Aceous Border. Mr. and Mrs. Biggins Laidley, who are rightly proud of their very large-chested daughter, Zena Biggins Laidley. I'm afraid you can't miss them. The Count and Countess Vesuya-ya-ya, and their daughter, Sheila Vesuya-ya-ya.
Okay. That's enough. Or it was several names ago. And so, it was time for Moll to be introduced to some of the society guests.
Come, Moll. Apparently it is time that you were introduced to some of the society guests.
Good evening, Cavalier. Who is this captivating wench?
This... This is Moll Flanders. Moll, this is Count Hugo Toujours la Politesse. Count Hugo, my wife.
Oh, I had no idea you was already married, my lord.
Madame, I have been looking forward to this sort of an anger.
Count Hugo is French.
Well, I know that.
Yes, but the audience might not have noticed.
But listen, the band is striking up. Will you join me on the floor?
Well, I don't want to get my dress dirty.
I mean, would you care to dance?
Oh, I would be delighted.
You will not be able to handle my long paso doble.
And you, sir, will be shocked when I show you my fandango.
For more, let me grab your castanets.
Oh, you naughty Frenchman. Take your hands off me at once and place them lower down. Why don't we try something a little bit more modern, perhaps?
Let me turn you around and bend you over.
Not in front of the guests.
No, I will teach you something modern. I will teach you to do some twerking.
Five minuets later, and exhausted from shaking my pom-poms, it was time for Count Hugo to leave. But for the rest of the evening, I seemed to see his devilishly handsome face always before me. That night, as I undressed in my boudoir, I heard a strange noise behind the screen.
Un, deux, trois, quatre.
The French count.
It is I, Hugo. Come away with me, mole.
What are you saying?
Oh, my little cabbage, my little mushroom. Let me tack you away from here.
But what about my husband?
Well, I'd rather take you. Oh, mole. Kiss me, mon chéri.
Oh, my
friend. Wait a minute. I haven't finished.
Oh. Done?
You certainly have been, yes. Très bien.
Oh, my fine count, you've persuaded me. Let us leave.
It was 12 o'clock, and Grimbling tolled the bell.
It's 12 o'clock, Bell.
We apologize for the loss of quality in our jokes. For the moment, we shall continue in sound only. Before Moll and Count Hugo could leave...
Sir! What have we here?
My husband.
Mon Dieu, I am undone.
So I can see. Count Hugo, I must insist that honor is satisfied. Choose your weapon.
I choose the sword.
Very well. I choose the pistol.
Oh. Murd.
Then. Good morning.
Oh, my dear Hugo, what will you do?
Mon chéri, I am an aristocrat and a Frenchman.
Then you'll fight him?
No, I'll run away. I shall smuggle myself into France.
But what about the French customs?
You must learn them from somebody else, my little one. Farewell, call me a handsome cab.
You're a handsome cab.
Thank you. I'm getting out of here. Adieu, adieu.
And so, without further ado, he was gone. Poor Moll didn't have time to persuade him to stay. It was definitely a case of Hugo first.
I never saw my lover Hugo again.
After cancelling Moll's French lessons, Sir Roger sent Grimbling to wake Lady Constance and raise the horses. He and Moll got ready to depart for their new life together in London. Lady Constance was a fine horsewoman herself, and elected to sit on a large chestnut.
Oh! Oh, it's prickly, but fun!
Grimbling was supposed to lead the way on the old grey mare, but he'd already left with a young blonde mayoress instead. The coachman picked up the reins, and as Sir Roger opened the door for Moll, the most excitable horse champed on his bit.
Ooh, not that bit.
So my husband and I set off for London, where we was to live. It was a beautiful night, and overhead the moon was full.
Oh, I've eaten too much.
In my moon voice.
As the carriage passed over a narrow bridge...
Stand and deliver!
Who the hell are you?
Well, I'm none other than Dick Turpentine.
Yes, it was none other than the dashing highwayman, Dick Turpentine. Whenever his name was mentioned, men whispered of danger and excitement.
Danger and excitement.
Hands up, the lot of you. This pistol I'm holding's a gun. So step out of the coach and throw down your valuables.
Now look here, my good fellow. If you let us go on our way, I'll give you these 4 pieces of 8. Or these 2 pieces of 16.
I'll take the money if you throw in your wife.
Very well.
Thank you, sir. God bless you.
Coachman, drive on to London!
Yes, sir. Giddy up there, me beauties.
You might have waited for me.
Well, I must be on my way.
Well, what about me?
You'll have to walk, seeing as you haven't got a horse to ride.
What about my wife?
You wouldn't get far on her. Anyway, she's coming with me. Have you come, gal?
More. You're not leaving me.
Yes, Roger. When I first met you, I thought you was well-bred. Now I find you're just half-baked.
That joke was sent in by Sylvia Jones of 14 Fairburn Avenue, Worcester.
Goodbye, Roger.
Come back! Come back! Mole! Dick Turpentine!
Danger and excitement.
Cut that out as well.
And so I went to look after my brave darling Dick, and I was very happy learning to polish his pistol for him. One evening... Hello, darling. Had a good day?
No. I had a bit of trouble robbing the Nottingham coach.
What sort of trouble?
Well, you remember how you spent last night darning the holes in my black mask?
Yes.
Exactly. Anyway, Mol, we're having someone for supper.
Ew, I thought he was having chicken. Who is she?
I met her today on the stagecoach. She's a very great lady. In size.
I shall never, ever, never let you go, Dick.
Yeah, well, I wish you would. It makes it very awkward to sit down.
Oh, young woman! Put down my saucebox fiancé.
Quick, Dick, you'll have to run for it.
Oh, no, he doesn't have to do anything for it.
But Lady Constance, how are you here? It's not possible.
Perhaps not, but it makes a very neat ending. Come here, you big bad Dick. Oh.
Of course, all good stories have morals, but this one has very few. And now, before we go, a weather report.
Cloudy, 7 out of 10. Must try harder.
You have been listening to I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again. A selection of sketches and songs by Graham Garden and Phil Oddie. And feature the voices of Hannah Boydell, David Clark, Barnaby Eden-Jones, William K.V. Brown, and Ben Perkins. In parts originally played by Tim Brooke Taylor, John Cleese, Graham Garden, David Hatch, Joe Kendall, and Phil Oddie. The music was arranged by Andrew Farrington with Andy Rushton, Catherine Thomas, and Paul Wood. The show was adapted, directed, and produced by Barnaby Eden-Jones, who also supplied additional written material. Sound effects were by Kim Jones. The sound was by Greg Wilson-Cobb. The show was edited by Andy Rushton. And we give grateful thanks to Jeb Roberts and Dirk Maggs. And for the last time this evening, you'll hear the stuffed ferret intone these words.
Oh, no! It's the end of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again! 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 Again!
My name is Angus Brew.
Is named after me.
My name is Angus Drew.